Flugshow, der deutsche Skispringen-Podcast. Alle News zum Skispringen der Männer und Frauen sowie spannende Hintergrundstories und exklusive Interviews. Präsentieren euch Tobias Ruf und Luis Holuch.
Hello everyone and welcome to a brand new episode of our ski jumping podcast Flugshow. And even though our episodes are regularly in German, we couldn't really resist having chats in English from time to time. And here is one of those. My name is Luis Holuch and I'm absolutely excited for today's recording. Previously, we've had Halvor Egner Granerud on our show when he won his first World Cup Globe. Then we also had a chat with David Kopatsky a while ago. And on the women's side, we already had guests like Silje Opset and Spieler Rogel. But now it's time for our third female non-speaking German guest. But she's surely going to be the best English speaker because she doesn't even have to switch from her mother tongue. There have been times when she was carrying her team all on her own, and she's also one of the most interesting personalities I got to know so far. And today she's going to talk about how life as a Canadian ski jumper is like. So welcome, Natalie Eilers. Great to have you on our show, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me. That was such a lovely introduction. I appreciate that.
As Sandro Pertile always says, we try our best. So
perfect.
Glad you're joining us. You're very, very busy at the moment, as we found out, not only whilst trying to find a date for our recording, but I'm glad it worked out today. So I'm sure people wonder, how are you doing and what are you up to at the moment?
Well, I just got back to Europe, I think just about 2 weeks ago. Today. So I just got back on skis. I spent the last, 5 months in Canada. And as probably most people know, the hills are not open in Canada. So I wasn't able to jump that entire time. But basically the reason for me being at home was I was there working an internship. So it was sort of for school, for work experience, kind of for a post-sport career type of deal. And then my dad got married at the end of the summer, so I had to wait until then, and then I flew back here.
That sounds like a very busy period, as I've mentioned before. I think for those of our listeners that haven't ever jumped yet, it's hard to imagine. So how is it like going on jumping skis after such a long break you've had in the meantime?
That's a really good question. This year, it was basically like there was no time off. I pretty much felt completely normal and fine. But there have been years before where I get back on skis and I feel pretty lost. Like last year in particular, I remember we tend to start on the 20 meter hill and then go up from there. But the first year doing that was a bit of a shock. And going from the 20 to the 60, it was like I was lost in space. So I have some experience there now. So doing that this year was fine. But yeah, it's always really nice to get back on skis. So less weird, more just exciting and fun.
So how did you approach these first jump? Was it just like, I have to get used again to the feeling? Or are you just trying to basically replicate what you already did last season?
Well, so my whole approach, because I took so much time off this summer, I thought a lot about what I was planning to do when I got back, and I had a plan set for myself. Kind of, I was going through the motions in my head more because I couldn't do it physically. So from the very beginning, it wasn't really, I'm going to get used to this again. It was pretty much, I'm going 100% every single jump. So I went into it as if I had taken no time off, which I suppose was a good thing. But yeah, that's kind of my approach this year.
And the reason why you only started jumping right now, you pointed out before, but of course, it's natural that your teammates who have been to Europe before have much more jumps under their belt. Is that something you look at, or do you even don't care at all?
Well, I know obviously they've been here training for quite a few months and they've been working really, really hard while I was gone. I was training off the hill, but there's only so much you can do when you're not actually ski jumping. So I know they've got quite a bit more training than I am, but basically the way I'm looking at it is I want to catch up. I'm working really hard to work, you know, maybe twice as hard to cut the time down so that I can catch up to where they are in as little time as possible, basically.
And are there specific things you're focusing right now in your jump, or is it just working on the whole package?
Well, when we start on the small hills, we start with very like specific technical issues. So one of the things that I had a problem with for many years was symmetry in my in run. And so the first, I think, three sessions that I did on the 60 meter hill, I had one coach and he was at the top. He wasn't even on the coach's stand, and he was watching from behind me just to see where my balance was. So the first two days, I think two or even the first 3 days of sessions, I basically was trying new things and shifting around just to get my in run into, you know, exactly where we want it to be so that I can push from there properly. Because if my in run's slightly off, which it was, you know, everything gets magnified. The bigger the hill, the more the speed.
And that makes a lot of sense, actually. And what comes into place at this period of time also is rule changes. And FIS has done a lot of work towards the new rules. Is this something you could already work on and get a first impression of how this affects your jump?
I haven't really experienced how it affects my jump just yet, because I haven't actually even had a suit made. I only just got my first measurement with the new method, I think last week or early this week, actually. So that was really, it is quite different than what we used to have. It was really strange, but I'll find out. Hopefully, ideally, I'll be going to Klingenthal and I'll have a suit made for then. But, you know, that is obviously depending on how I'm jumping and how everything is going leading up to then. But we'll see. I hope that it's all good.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I'm planning to go to Klingenthal, so it would be nice to hear from your perspective live then. And of course, it's not that easy because it's quite a big boy you're going to jump there.
That's so, the good ones.
yeah. Okay. Statement made. Fantastic. You've already pointed out that in Canada, the situation is like far from ideal. Let's put it this way. You have no jumps you can use over there, even though you live in Calgary. Calgary is your hometown. And even for me, from a longer distance, quite hard to see this facility just deteriorating, basically. So how is it like for you if you basically see them every day, as you told me before?
Well, it's definitely really sad, like you said, watching them kind of decay. They just sit there. I mean, our large hill hasn't been open for quite a long time. So that one we've all been coping with for a very long time. I never even got to jump it. But the 90 meter hill in Calgary, it still even has plastic on it. And I, you know, sometimes I'm like, what if I just ran up there and, you know, put the water on myself and just jumped myself? Like, I almost could do that. So it's really sad to see them just sitting there. But, you know, that's just the way it is right now. So we're making do. We have to move here and we have to train here because of that. So, yeah.
Is there even a serious perspective if it's ever going to change, or is the situation just as it is?
I wish I could give you an answer that would, you know, answer that question, but I hope so. I mean, it would be a dream of mine for that to be something that would happen, for them to reopen, because, you know, then way down the road, my kids, my friends' kids, you know, whoever, we can get more people jumping in Canada. And that's ultimately the dream, right? You want to have way more people from Canada jumping, because we have such a small group right now. We're working on it, but, you know, it takes time and it takes hills. That's most important.
Yeah. So if I'm not mistaken, it's only the Olympic hills in Whistler you could use during the winter. Is that right?
Yeah, the hills in winter are open every so often. I don't know specifically what the situation is right now, just because we're almost never in Canada, but we have jumped there in the winter, and they hold events every so often. I think they held a COC and they held a couple of FIS Cups and whatnot, and World Juniors, obviously. So hopefully at some point we can hold some bigger competitions, which would be really cool.
Absolutely. I mean, like the 2010 Olympics are still very present in my memory, and also used to like these hills. So it would be really cool, especially this, you know, like I feel like nowadays the hills got more and more like similar in a way, and these still to me seem like they're a bit different.
Yeah, they're well, it's one of the most beautiful places, honestly, I've been. So I'm a little biased because it's in Canada, but the view from up there is really not like anything else. So it would be really cool to have people come to Canada to see Canada and kind of see what we're very proud of, you know, like the views, the mountains, everything, and the hills are just, they're perfect. I mean, they're so much fun to jump. I think Whistler's 90 is probably one of my favorite hills. I've never actually jumped the big hill there. So
Oh,
maybe,
okay.
maybe we can make that change sometime, but I've only heard good things about it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the jumps that are still present are looking very, very sick. Like the, what was it, 150 meters or something from GS back then, Gregor Schlierenzauer. So looks like you can go a long way down there.
Yeah, pretty cool hills.
So a funny story, which we might share with our listeners, is how we started to talking about having you on our show, actually, because it was very weird, because at that point you've made an Instagram post like something like can't wait to go back on skis and do what I love to do. But at the same time, however it happened, there were some rumors about you retiring coming on, and this is how we started about talking having you on the podcast. And I noticed that you were really thinking a lot about how you handle this responsibility sort of as an athlete being on social media, and even worried about your statement you've posted back then. Yeah. So maybe you can explain it from your side, because I've never been in such a situation before. How did it make you feel like at that moment?
Well, I was obviously pretty anxious about it because I was planning to come back. I was, you know, from the winter, I was talking with my coaches. We knew that I was working this internship, and we knew that I was coming back to Canada for like quite a decent amount of time. So I don't know. I had thought about it beforehand, and I thought, you know, when people see that I'm not there and my teammates are there, they might have questions, but I figured, you know, they would ask me about it and ask when you coming back or whatever. And so I just decided I didn't need to make a post or anything like that. I think sometimes I'm a little naive because I don't necessarily think people are paying much attention. But yeah, basically I didn't really think that it was necessary to share. And then when I didn't post much about sport for a while, I guess people just started thinking that I wasn't coming back, which fair enough if that's what they thought. But when I started hearing that people thought I wasn't coming back, then I was like, no, that's not true. I'm still training. I'm here. I want to come back. You know, I'm excited to come back and I really want to join my team. And watching them jump so well and have so much success, it made me super excited to come back. So I was like, basically, I need to make sure that everyone knows that I am coming back. I am excited. I want to be there. And these are the reasons why I'm not there. So I guess I basically, the quote announcement that I had to make, that I thought I had to make earlier on, I just ended up making in August, closer to when I came back.
Makes a lot of sense. But it's weird. And I told you, like, I wouldn't even want to know how I would handle it as an athlete if I was in your situation, because it felt like they expect something from you that you don't have to do.
Yeah, it's a weird line, because I feel like you, with very famous athletes, you see them, you know, they're making posts all the time, they're keeping everyone informed because there's this fan base and this group of people who are very invested in what they're doing and you know how they're going about their life and whatnot. And I guess I, you know, when you're an athlete, but you're not at that level of, you know, quote, fame, or you don't have that big of a fan base, it's just not something that you consider. And so, like I said, it's just a bit of a surprise. And it's a reminder that, you know, just because you're in a sport and you aren't maybe doing your best or don't have the biggest fan base, it doesn't mean that people aren't paying attention. And yeah, it's just something that we have to consider, I guess. I now realize I have to consider that when I'm making posts or when I'm not making posts, you know, and I'm taking time off or I'm not, you know, all of that I need to think about more, I guess, basically.
Or it's just like people are just caring about you, which is also quite a nice feeling,
It's
I would
nice,
assume.
yeah. I guess it's a bit of a pleasant surprise, yeah.
Sometimes even caring more about yourself than about you than you are about yourself, basically.
It's an interesting situation to be in, for sure. It's a weird little limbo between, you know, being at that level where a lot of people care and at that level where no one really knows. So
Yeah.
you kind of navigate it as it comes to you.
But you've told me before that there were actually times you were at least like thinking about maybe just retiring from ski jumping, but apparently you decided against that. So what is it that keeps you going, basically?
Yeah, well, so there was times when I was considering retiring, just because I know that people probably understand this, but being a Canadian athlete in this sport is incredibly difficult. And we move, you know, 8,000 kilometers away from our home. We leave our friends, we leave our family. We spend the entire year almost somewhere else. And it can be really hard, you know, being kind of isolated from all of what you know, just to do the sport, just so that you can be competitive, basically. So there were times where I thought about it, but when I came back, you know, I spent the fall doing school because I'm also a university student. I'm slowly chipping away at my degree between traveling and competing and everything. When I came back after the fall semester and I started jumping again, I just got that adrenaline and I got that excitement back again. You know, you take a little time off and you kind of forget how cool this sport is. And as soon as you're flying, it's like, why wouldn't I do this until I can't anymore? You know what I mean? Like, if my body can do it and my brain allows me to do it, I need to take advantage of that, because there's a lot of people who wouldn't be willing to do it or can't physically do it, you know? So that's basically, you know, why I decided, oh, I need to keep going for sure.
Well, it's like, this is also a common phenomenon, especially over here in Germany, that especially media are tending to like tell people when they should stop. Like this famous example probably is Martin Schmidt. He was jumping for a long time and still, like, even until his very last day, they were like, just, he should have retired a long time ago. And I was always like, how can you even suggest people to stop doing what they love?
Yeah, it's surprising to me. I mean, I understand like taking a point of view on it, because one thing I think that, and we've talked about this, it's hard to decide when, because it's, you either retire at the top of your career, or you retire at the bottom of your career, or you retire when you're injured. So it's like, how do you pick which one is the right one? When you're injured, it's like, I want to get back. I don't want to be that, you know, I don't want that to be why I stopped. If it's the height of your career, it's like, how can I stop when I'm doing so well? And at the bottom of your career, it's like, I don't want to end on that note either. I want to do better. You know what I mean? It's almost like gambling in a sense, because it's like, you're winning, you want to keep winning. Or if you're not winning, you want to get your winnings back. You know what I mean? It's a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, afterwards, you're always smarter, right? But this was also something I talked to Spela about, because she said she never wanted to leave the sport when she's not on a high level. She like chose the time when she was jumping on the highest possible level for herself, she said. And I mean, this is like, this is obviously the goal you should aim for, but how do you know there's not more to come?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you want to be, I mean, theoretically, you want to be always at the highest level. And then whenever you retire, you're going to be retiring at the highest level. But that's just not how sport works. So you're right. How do you really know if, you know, you continue on and then things get even better, or, you know, if you continue on and it gets worse? You really can't tell what's going to happen even the next season. So you just kind of have to, I guess it's all a personal decision. You have to think about how your mental health is. You know, you have to think about how your physical body is doing, because there's a lot of injury in sport. And then, you know, for nations that have less support, financial in particular, that's another big factor. So as a Canadian athlete, you know, it's a lot more difficult to continue on versus someone who has quite a lot of support. So those are all things you have to consider when looking to retire.
Yeah, absolutely. And funding is like a good topic, because this is Of course, for us Middle Europeans, it's like, yeah, the athletes can stay at the army or customs or police or something. But I would imagine in Canada, it looks slightly different. So maybe you can give us an insight on how it is for you.
Yeah, well, so in Canada, we do have some government funding. You have to meet a certain criteria, of course, to get it. And it covers most, it's meant for living and like living and transportation. So, you know, whatever that looks like for you, it doesn't necessarily cover everything for sure. There, because we have, you know, we have fees every season that we need to pay just for everything. And then we have equipment that we, you know, some of us buy for ourselves. Some of it is sponsorship, but then there's some things that aren't covered by sponsors. And it looks different depending on who you are. But basically, for me, the way it looks for me is, one, I've had fantastic parents my whole life who have supported me through all of it. I literally could not be doing this if not for them, like no chance. And they continue to do that. They basically have said, it's your dream, you know, we'll be there for you as long as you need it. So I'm very lucky, very, very lucky for that. And then behind that, I have the government funding as well. But then I also am now working part-time remote. My summer internship that I mentioned earlier, they've extended my contract. So I'm still working from here. I have different, slightly different hours, obviously, than when I was in Canada, just because I'm 8 hours ahead. But that's another thing that is helping with, you know, the costs of things. But that's not even necessarily why that's such an exciting thing. That's more exciting because of the work experience and you know, continuing to learn and everything, because I love to learn. But anyways, that's how it kind of looks for me.
And did your team notice something has changed after this very successful past season?
Well, that I would have to ask, to be honest. I can tell definitely the way that the team functions itself, it is on another level. Like every year it seems it's getting up a little higher, a step higher, you know, with the success comes more, you know, professionalism, and we have more help. We have a physio now that travels with us as well, and she travels more with us. So there definitely is areas where we are seeing more support and things are looking better. And I think every year with more success and the more the team pushes forward, the better that'll get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it would be a pity if it wasn't like this, because it would mean that these kind of successes were not really worth it, basically. So
well, I think it would always be worth it, obviously, but
yeah, but you know how
it's a happy byproduct for sure, is what I would say. Yeah.
Well, I've already mentioned that it must have been like a crazy, crazy year for your team with Alexandria winning both gold in Whistler at the juniors and also in Planica, and also that new Canadian record she flew in Vikersund. But it's also easy for media to forget about those who are like a bit behind and even behind the scenes. So I was wondering, what was your best moment last winter, actually?
My best moment? That is a great question. You know, I feel like I don't get asked that often. I might give you kind of a cheesy answer versus like a number answer or a place answer. I could say, you know, the most fun I had this past winter season was in World Championships during the team event. That was like probably one of the most fun days for all of us. It was like we really were a team and we were all so happy for each other. And I think that I would have to say that was my highest point in the season, just because that was when I was the happiest. And my parents were here to visit. My dad and my stepmom were here during World Championships. My mom came during Raw Air. So having family come and visit, having my team be so happy and together, working together, and I did have better jumps. That was awesome. So yeah, that was definitely my favorite and my highest point of the season was during World Championships.
Believe it or not, but that was also the guest I've made before. I was like, she has to mention that.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about making the point of just deciding I wanted to continue with sport as being a big, you know, a big highlight of my season, just because obviously I really had the passion and I have the drive, and that was cool to really feel that high level again. But yeah, aside from that, it was World Championships.
And from the viewer's perspective, I guess it was also Vikersund with the ski flying event.
Well, watching that was pretty insane, honestly. I don't think I've laughed like a child like that in so long. I think I took a video of every single one of those girls, their first jumps, and I just have them in my phone. And the coolest part about it, actually, is that when you're watching it, every single person who jumped, regardless of the distance they went, everyone was clapping. Yep. As soon as they landed, there was, you know, the as they were jumping, and then everyone was clapping and cheering every single time they landed, regardless of distance. And that was really, really cool, because it was, you know, different coaches, different nations, athletes, you know, officials, everyone was just so happy to be there and to see that happening.
Absolutely. I mean, I was also present that weekend, and it was like, never ever I've experienced like filling this whole ski jumping family hashtag with so much life as during that weekend. It was insane.
I agree. It was wild. Like, and it always feels like a family, like the hashtag ski jumping family. Yeah. It always feels like that. But that was definitely like the most I've ever felt it. Cause even we had all of the guys who were watching it on TV and cheering, and I saw videos of them all watching and cheering. And it was just this really cool moment in history, I guess, where everyone in the sport came together and was just so happy for each other, like not even worried about competition or anything like that, just so happy to be there.
Absolutely, yeah. I can, well, I've seen a few competitions on site already, but I will always say that was like the most emotional, for sure, because it was hard not to cry, even just as a spectator.
Yeah. I'm a crier, so yeah. I cried.
Oh, we should have found a self-caring group back then. And also like the whole event is like, and plus we got it on tape because we were filming a documentary about it, which is hopefully coming the next winter. So
that's so cool.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. We worked our asses off, basically. Sorry for that word in the podcast.
No worries.
For the last 2.5 years, and we are just putting it together at the moment. So stay tuned for that.
I look forward to seeing that when it comes out.
I will ask for English subtitles because it's supposed to be in German. But
would be nice if you could do that for me.
I mean, you have a German sounding surname. Do you have any connection with Germany, actually?
Yes, actually, my family on my dad's side is German, but I don't speak any German. That's the only thing. Yeah.
Okay.
I find my last name to be really cool because I learned recently I have like a family history book that my father has sent me. And I found out that Eilers came from the matriarchal side. So it came from the women, which is like extra cool. Yeah. So I'm like, that's probably one of the most, excuse me, I'll use this word as well, badass last names that I could possibly have.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we have a Karl Eilers Straße here in my hometown, so I will ask to rename it for good measure.
Perfect.
I have to ask an evergreen of our podcast history, because we are asking everyone, every guest. Most stories are family related, so they have had some ancestors or family members that have been practicing ski jumping before, but I don't think in your case that's actually the truth.
No, absolutely no one in my family or extended family or friends, anyone was a ski jumper before I started. Basically, the way that I got into ski jumping was, it's a funny story. It was from an email. So I was originally a competitive figure skater for quite a long time. And I remember I was getting ready for one of my ice times, and my mom got an email from my school. And I think it was in grade 7, maybe at that time. And she just said to me, do you want to try ski jumping? And I didn't even know what she was talking about. But when I was young, they put me into every sport. Basically, I tried every single sport that they gave me. So I was like, yeah, why not? I want to try. And I learned how to ski, like downhill ski, when I was about 3 years old. So it was, you know, kind of like a no-brainer for me. I loved winter. I love winter sports. So she said ski jumping. I heard ski. I was like, absolutely. And So I went into this program called the Talent ID program, and it was like physical testing off the hill, kind of all of this stuff off the hill first. And they brought the program down smaller and smaller until there were only a handful of athletes left. And then they took us over to see the ski jumps, but we were on alpine skis. And they were taking us over to see the 18, which was the smallest hill we had in Calgary. It's now unfortunately gone, but they took us over to see that. And on the way, we saw the 30 meter hill, and me and one other girl looked at that thing and we were like, can we just go off that right now? Like, I don't want to see the smaller one. Can we just jump this one? And it was actually, I believe it was Trevor Morris who was taking us over there, which I'm sure you know, he's an ex-jumper. And he was like, yeah, I could be wrong there. I'll have to fact check that. I don't remember specifically who it was, but they said, absolutely. So we jumped the 30 meter. We just kind of like stepped our way up the hill, up the track, and just jumped into it. And I absolutely buckled like so bad on the knoll because I had no idea what I was doing, but it was like the biggest rush and it was so much fun. So from then I was like, yeah, this is a sport I'm definitely interested in. And they put me on jump skis and I started on the 18, and that's kind of, you know, where it went from there. I'm still doing it. So.
And I've got to admit, I have sort of a database on my computer where I collect like facts, like you've already mentioned. And I don't know where I read it, but I have to fact check it. Is it true that just a year after you started jumping, you already made your first jump on a large hill?
It was 1 year to the 90, and it was 2 years to the large hill.
Okay.
Yes.
Still sounds ridiculous from my perspective. So how on earth did you do that?
Quite fast. Well, I basically just, like, you know how I said that my parents offered me sports and I just said yes? I pretty much just said yes always. So when they said try bigger hill, I said, okay, no problem. And I'm pretty sure actually my first day on jump skis, we started on the 18. I'm fairly certain they just sent me already to the 30. So it was like, I'm pretty sure I got this idea in my head that I wanted to do it as fast as possible. I wanted the bigger hill and I wanted more speed. So I was just trying to get as, you know, to the biggest hill I could as fast as I could, basically, which worked. I did it quite quickly. But then after 2 years going to the large hill in Park City, which it's a smaller large hill, but that was wild, such a crazy feeling for me. And then I went immediately back to the 30 meter hill. And because I didn't really understand what was going on, because I kind of was just jumping whatever they sent me to, I dove off of the 30 meter hill as I would have on the big hill. And I landed square on my face. And that was my worst concussion I've ever had in my life. I was like, half of my face was swollen, you know, out to here, my eye was shut. I lost like 2 months of my memory. I had no idea what was going on. Oh. So that was a wild experience, but we came back from that. My face is okay.
It is.
So is my brain.
It sounds more like a story from a boxer, but okay.
I have some pretty funny pictures, to be honest. So one day remind me and I'll show you.
Okay. You know, if you just give me those hints, I will not forget about it. So
I know, I can tell you write things down.
Yeah, I can blame it on you then, because you've told me now.
No worries.
But speaking about your hat, I think you have one of the most easily recognizable helmets on the circuit with your huge tiger on it. Is there a story behind it?
Yeah, actually, it's not a super interesting story, but I don't know why, but from like quite a young age, I was like obsessed with white tigers specifically, not regular tigers, but white tigers. And in my bedroom, I had like giant stuffed white tigers on my bed. And I had like a safari themed room because I loved big cats in general. So then it was a birthday gift. My first helmet like that was my 18th birthday gift from my parents. They had my helmet painted. Yeah. And the first one was a similar tiger. It had a maple leaf also on the forehead, but then it had kind of a, you know, a little detail pale around it, and then the rest of it was white. And that was my first painted helmet. And the problem is, once you have something like that, it is really hard to convince yourself to go back to something more plain. So after some time, I needed to get a new helmet. And so for another birthday, my parents again had my helmet painted. And this time we went a little bit more extreme. We got the maple leaf on the back. We've got the tiger on the top. My dad always says to me something like "Eye of the Tiger" when I'm going into competition, because he knows that it's on my helmet. I have a tattoo of a tiger on my ribs as well. Like I just loved them. But yeah, it was a really, really cool birthday gift, two times now from my parents. So
don't you dare get used to it. Otherwise, you will just ask for a new helmet every year or something.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about how I'm gonna do another one, you know. But I feel like three looks really good on a wall one day. So I
Absolutely.
Feel like I have to at least get one more really cool one.
You should even put a trademark on it, so nobody gets the idea to copy it. Actually.
Oh yeah. Well, I feel like I've kind of done that, not specifically, but I would be surprised if someone did a similar design, just because it's my thing.
Well, you never know. What I was thinking about was also, like, of course, not the way it is right now, but in earlier years when you stayed together as a team for a long time, and even longer than other teams apparently, because they can move to their home sort of. Is there ever a point where you just like can't stand each other anymore, or is it just like always happy family?
Well, I wouldn't say it's always happy family, but the family part is right, because most of us grew up together. Because our club basically in Calgary was the only one when I was younger that we had athletes coming out of, we all started training together super young. So, you know, Abby and Nicole started training together way before I even started ski jumping. So they literally grew up together. But then I was 12 when I started, and I was training with them. So from, you know, as soon as I started jumping, I pretty much was around the same people for 5, 6 days a week doing, you know, jumping, doing cross country skiing, biking, tennis, volleyball, like whatever random fun activities and training we used to do, we were always doing them together. So we grew up together. So anyways, the long story, the point behind that is we're kind of like sisters. So if you have siblings, I'm sure you can understand this. You aren't always, you know, you're not always happy with other people. That's normal in any relationship. You just can't possibly do that.
Yeah.
But the quote negative times are not bad, if that makes sense. It's like a little bickering and then it's gone. So if ever we had any kind of need for space or anything like that, we would just give it to each other and like respect that. So I don't honestly think I remember a single time when we had a big issue on this team with any of us. Like we're all very, very close together. And if there's ever problems, we sort them out pretty much right at the beginning. So yeah, it's pretty good. And living together also, we kind of had to deal with that even more, obviously, because we're living in close quarters, but we would just deal with it when it came up. And it wasn't that often, to be honest.
Well, that sounds absolutely great. I mean, it's
we're honestly really lucky to have a team like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would imagine it's not the same for everyone out there. So yeah.
But maybe not. I'm not sure.
But if I understood you correctly, it's like you don't have to worry that you get sort of your me time if you needed to.
No, you can take that. Like we know each other so well that as soon as you can tell, basically as soon as one of the teammates needs to be left alone, we know the signs, and we just, you know, once that happens, it's like, okay, no worries. Don't talk to them. Or, you know, they don't talk to me if I'm all of a sudden, you know, in a mood or something like that. It's honestly just boundaries and like respecting the boundaries that we have for each other, or, you know, with each other. And that's basically how it works so well.
Like, people will be impressed how mature athletes in such a young age can already be, like, because many people think like they they don't even have to care for themselves because they have their people doing it for themselves. But obviously, in your case, it's slightly different.
Wasn't always like that. That's yeah. for sure. We did a lot ourselves. Yeah.
I have to admit that Canada is absolutely on my bucket list in terms of traveling. I have to see this this country because every person I got to know from Canada is just so super cool. And I know someone in my close circle who has been to Canada and who asked me a question I never got asked before, but now I have to ask it to you. Okay. So,
a little nervous for that.
No, don't be. It's like,
okay.
I was just like, why do you even wonder about that? It's she spent a longer time in Canada, and I promised to her to ask the next Canadian I ran into this okay. question. So, what is your favorite month of the year and why?
My favorite month. I have a very quick and easy answer. October.
Oh, because, damn.
Yes, because my birthday is on Halloween.
Makes
and
sense.
Halloween in North America is huge, but it's extra important for me because I absolutely love Halloween. All things like spooky, scary, Halloween decorations, you know, anything autumn, I absolutely love it. So easy, quick answer, October for sure. I have a blanket that I use year round that's just bats. And I have a bat tattoo because I love Halloween. So that's an easy answer.
Okay. Okay,
but
I got you.
My answer might be different than a lot of other Canadians for that reason. I do love winter. Winter is my favorite season. So
it might be, but believe it or not, the person that asked me the question had exactly the same answer. Not particularly for Halloween, but she said like, oh, late October or November is just like so beautiful. She's just loving fall.
It is really pretty. Yeah. Fall is really beautiful because all the trees change color and everything is really pretty in the mountains and everything. But yeah, I get that. But Halloween's cooler.
I have to admit that I'm not that much into it, but maybe it's just the lack of experience in that field. So
it's probably it's my birthday and it's also big in my country, so that makes sense.
Yeah. So what is your go-to Halloween costume then?
There is not a go-to because I do something different probably every year.
Okay.
But I like to make part of my costume if I can.
Okay.
So quite a few of the last years I haven't been in Canada, so it hasn't been quite like that. But this past year I was in Canada over Halloween, so I had this really cool kind of circus clown costume, which was really fun. I really liked it.
Okay, that sounds fun indeed. So we are recording on this 21st of September, and your teammates are currently going to Romania to Rusnov, mm-hmm. as I've learned from Romanians, actually, it's a pronunciation.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Glad I was able to help out. How are your personal plans for the next few weeks? And you've already said like there's a possibility we can see you on the competition again.
Yeah. So obviously, I just got back. I have been jumping. I've been training very hard since I came back, and I'm working very hard to hopefully go to Klingenthal. Of course, that's all dependent on a conversation I'll have with my coaches, whether or not it's, you know, the right time, whether or not I'm ready. Most important thing is to not rush into competitions because there's no point. So yeah, we'll see. I'm working really hard. I'm really hoping because I love competing and I would love to get to go on a trip with my team again for the first time since winter. So yeah, we'll see. I'm going to watch them, obviously, on TV this weekend, and I'm going to cheer them on. I have my little maple leaf over there, and hopefully it's an exciting one for them.
Yeah, I would hope so, too. I mean, it's like we were always like thinking like the Romanians deserve to have like the best athletes on site, but usually it's like not the not the best equipped starting lists, let's put it that way. So if gonna be an interesting one anyway.
it tends to be, I feel like, pretty interesting there. It's more exciting when things change, so that's what I'll say. That's a positive about things kind of shifting around, is you see new results lists, you see kind of different things happening, and that's always exciting.
So we actually have to keep our fingers crossed for a change, because so far, at least on the women's side, the summer Grand Prix have been pretty similar to each other before.
Pretty much the same, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to complain there, because
no.
You got some Maple Leafs up there, so.
I mean.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I would be surprised if you voted for change in that case.
I wouldn't.
And getting back to that like favorite month topic, I would imagine it was difficult to name something else than October if you have literally the leaf on your country flag.
Yeah, the red maple leaf. Well, I mean, that we see the leaves all year. Well, not all year round, not in the winter, but they are falling at that time. So I suppose that is true. You see a lot more of them on the ground, and they're beautiful and red. So yeah, October is just a good month. It's a great month.
looking forward to 5 degrees in Klingenthal then, but we will see that. I've told you before that I don't like to ask the typical question, but one apparently has to be, because it's also interesting for our listeners. Have you set yourself already any goals towards the upcoming season?
I have. I obviously am coming in later. And so I've missed a couple months of really good, solid training. So I don't like to put number goals down, because I don't think that that's necessarily productive for myself, especially at this time. So I think one of my biggest goals is there's a few little issues that I've dealt with, like technically speaking, on the hill for quite a few years. And I will be so happy if I can solve those consistently and be consistent on the hill. And as long as I'm, 100% confidence all in every jump, like my plan, then I'm happy. Because once you do those things, then results follow after that. But if I start thinking about, I want a top 20 or I want a top 10 or whatever it is, then you start to kind of wash out what the specific details are that are needed to get to that point. So I my brain is very jumbled all the time, and I know I have to bring it down to a level where I can just see 2-3 points and go from there. Otherwise, things get mixed up.
Yeah. So you can basically confirm the theory that you're jumping your best when you're fully able to just turn your head off, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. My head is difficult to turn off as well. So it's a journey. It's been a journey working on that. So a lot of mental training for sure. Working on a lot of stuff with our sports psych for that, for sure.
Yeah.
But okay, I will say I do want more points.
Well,
I want to get points.
That's a fair thing to say, actually.
Yeah.
And you've already said that you're also working on a plan for after sports, like your next future career. I noticed that in ski jumping, there's like two type of people that are retiring. One people, they're just like, leave me alone. I don't want to hear or read or see anything from ski jumping afterwards. And then there's the second type, which just can't get out of it. What do you think your future will look like in that regard?
I think I don't fit into either one of those boxes. Ooh. Because once I retire from sport, whenever that is, I am going to finish my degree. Or if I haven't finished it by the time I retire, for sure, I need to finish my degree. And I'm going to be working in something that's not ski jumping related, but I am always going to be a huge fan, and I am always going to follow, and I'm going to, who knows, maybe I'll help out on the other end too. Like maybe I will stay a little involved, but I know for sure that I have goals in my career. I know that I won't be able to, let's say, coach long-term if I wanted to do, I can't do both.
Yeah.
So I will stay involved in the ways that I can, and I will be the biggest fan for sure. But whenever that comes, I'm not looking at that anytime soon.
Okay, sounds like a deal. So we will add you to the like 2% of other people that don't fit into the two
very small subgroup that you didn't mention. That's me.
Yeah. Okay. But this topic of female coaches is quite an interesting one. because we have ex-ski jumper Ulrike Gressler on the show from time to time, and she's getting asked a lot, yeah, why didn't you become a coach? And I think there's like obvious reasons on the hand why women don't become coaches, especially in ski jumping when you have to travel so much, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's not even necessarily a reason why I wouldn't coach. If I didn't have interests in other things, like in my degree in finance or you know, in I'm working in oil and gas, if I didn't have those interests, I would probably have no problem traveling and doing that, you know, and coaching. I think that would be so, so cool because I've been involved in the sport my entire life. I've been on this end of it and I know how fun it is on this end. And I can imagine it's so much fun as a coach or as staff or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have a feeling in coming years as more women start to retire, you'll start to see more female coaches. I do think that because I think that we all just love the sport so much. And I think the reason why there isn't as many now for there's some reasons, obviously, that we didn't mention before. But I think another big reason is just because it's a young sport for women and it only started being competitive for women in recent years. So most of the athletes haven't even retired yet.
Good point. Good point. Absolutely. And but I feel like it's starting to get growing. Basically, like Daniela Raschko-Stolz is part-time coach, you could basically say. Then I think the most famous female coach, Line Jahr from Norway, is in charge of the younger group, the Project 2026.
Yep, I was on that team for a little bit.
You were? Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, I have to add that
to my... Abby and I trained with Line for a couple of months, a couple of years ago, three years ago, maybe?
Okay.
So
you're actually one of the few examples that have had a female coach in their career before.
I have had a female coach in my career before, yeah, and it was brilliant. I absolutely love Line. She's a fantastic coach, and I had the best time when I was there, but it was two of us, and then two teammates were not there. So when there was an opportunity, you know, and obviously Yanko and Igor are fantastic coaches. We absolutely love having them. Our team is so great. And with everyone that's joined too, you know, with Tanya, our sports psych, and now with Leia, our physio who travels with us, and then Balki and Yaro who work with Mac on the men's team. Our team has gotten so, so good and so solid. I absolutely loved working with Line, but now we have like an actual team, like versus us joining someone else.
Yeah.
We have, you know, our team. So I really appreciated the working with a woman. That was really cool. Really cool. And now we have a sports psych who's a woman as well and a physio. Mm-hmm. And she's also like similar in age to us as well, which is a whole other level of, you know, being able to relate to her and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that sounds great. Like, also great future perspectives for your team. And we've pointed out many times on our podcast that it's like, we get the feeling that besides, or let's say on the men's side, besides Japan, there's not much going on outside of Europe, but obviously the women keep holding the overseas flag basically. So that's really, really cool.
We're trying our best.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you ready for a small game to finish this off? I've got like five quick fire questions, sort of, but you can obviously also like give reasons why you chose that particular answer if you're ready.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Let's start easy off with what is your favorite hill?
Whistler 90.
Okay.
I think I mentioned it before, but
yeah,
it's at home. It's in Canada. It's in the mountains. I love the mountains so much. The views there are beautiful. The hill itself is super fun. And yeah, I have had great times there. My family is close by. It's just, it's all good there. Everything's good there.
I mean, we've had a couple of guests before, but that answer pretty much came out of nowhere. So you don't belong to the 50% that said like Planitza ski flying hill or something like that, or like.
Well, I haven't ski flown yet, so I feel like you're gonna have to ask me that maybe after the season, because hopefully that happens.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. then I also have to ask you about what's your least favorite hill.
Well, that's a great question. That's a harder one. Maybe Frenchstadt, just because I have had some not so good jumps on that hill. I literally landed straight on my chest on the knoll and slid the whole thing down,
Oh God.
which I don't know how it was possible, but once you do that, it's kind of hard to like come back from that.
But this is also a good lesson for our listeners. If you think that ski jumping hills who have the same basic figures are similar, apparently they are not, because like on paper, Frenchstadt and Wisterhall aren't that different, but
In practice, they feel very different. Yeah.
But I guess there's something you gotta experience yourself
Yeah,
how to
I
explain.
invite everyone to give it a try.
Okay. Third question, and I'm really curious about that answer because it hasn't been mentioned in your story so far, but have you ever heard a ski jumping idol for yourself?
Yeah, I have. I mean, always it was Sarah Takanashi, and in recent years I've gotten to know her, which has been really cool, and now she's more of like a friend, but she will always be an idol of mine because she's, pretty legendary, and she's pretty good at the sport.
Yeah, damn good,
She's quite
actually.
good. Handful of wins here and there,
Yeah, like from time to time,
over
like
60.
yeah. So many that people keep forgetting about her when it's about like who has the most World Cup wins, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
Nice one.
that's a damn good answer, actually. We haven't had that before on our show, so props to you.
Thank you. It's the truth.
Even better. What has been your best moment in your career so far?
Best moment. Do you mean just that's just any kind of way, right? Not results or anything based.
Whatever you feel like answering.
Honestly, I'm going to give the same answer as my favorite moment from the season. It was
Really?
during World Championships. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, like I said before, our team was just so happy to be together. I was jumping better. Everyone was excited for each other. And it's like the feeling was just so, the vibes were high. Everyone's family was there. And then Allie won world championships, and that was literally probably one of the most insane things I've ever witnessed. So, just being around that and being a part of that and knowing what can come out of that and what all of us can do, it's really exciting because if one girl from Canada can show up and win world championships, what does that mean for me or for, younger athletes coming from Canada? Like it's really cool to see the team moving forward and stepping up all the time. So yeah, that was one of probably my favorite times in ski jumping.
Usually, I hate to repeat myself, but this is a damn good answer as well, because I think it's the least selfish answer, if you want to put it that way, because every guest we've had before was something like, yeah, this particular success or this particular jump even, and you just come up with something you were just like
Yeah, well,
small part of.
I think that just because the emotions behind it are a big part of it for me. Like it's not necessary. I was happier in those moments than I have been when I've jumped better, let's say in training. You know what I mean? Like I base it not off of, again, and like I said before with my goals for the season, I base it not off of my results, the number, whatever it is, but it's how I feel I've done. And I don't feel I've done my best yet. So I don't think that I can say, this win or this jump or whatever it is, because I don't think I've reached a point where I can say I'm happy with that. I'm not happy with that yet. I still have to keep going. So ask me again sometime in the future, and hopefully I can tell you it was, I don't know, some podium or something like that, because that then I'll tell you that was the highlight.
Okay, we got a deal here. Looking
Okay.
forward to that
Me too.
chat already. And last but not least, I can imagine this is sort of a mean question. At least people struggle
Yeah.
to answer it, but I have to ask you that. Is there a funny moment or a funny story that you can share you immediately think about, or just like something you can be sure you're gonna write into your biography whenever it comes out?
Oh my goodness. A funny story?
Like if you have
Or
some,
just like interesting or That's a tough
It's a
question.
huge
It's very tough.
question. Yeah, I
That
know.
is a tough question. In my biography, what that's the point of that question is what's big enough and important enough to go into a biography about myself?
I wouldn't expect the photo we've made together in here, so we can skip that.
Excuse me. Well, you know what? Thinking about, okay, when I was jumping in Lake Placid last fall, probably one of the biggest surprises for me was that weekend of competition. So I think that that would be one thing I would mention. Basically, so again, I had taken, a month and a half off because I was back in Canada. I was doing school. And then I was unbelievably stressed because I had a full course load. I have four, five courses I was doing at the time. I had started doing midterms. I literally flew out the Thursday night from Calgary to Montreal, and I had written an exam before that flight. I arrived at like 2 in the morning, and then we had two competitions on Friday and one on Saturday. So I had shown up without any sleep. I think I slept for maybe two-ish hours, and I hadn't jumped in a month and a half, and I was literally so stressed about school, and I was working at the time. And my first jump was like, I don't know, 86 meters or something like that. And then I went 103 meters twice in a competition. And that was, no one was expecting, I wasn't expecting that. No one else was expecting that. So that was probably one of the craziest and like most exciting things because it was such a surprise. And it went back to the habits, kind of what we had worked on, the baseline we had set for ourselves on the hill. And yeah, I just showed up that weekend and I want to do that again. So yeah, I guess that's what I would write down is like out of nowhere, hill record jump, I'm pretty sure twice in a row out of nowhere and second in every competition that weekend.
That's actually one of the best stories we've had in that category so far. So, hats off to you. Well
Nice.
done.
Nice.
And I just hope secretly that you didn't explain the keys to success of how to actually be jumping good in Planica, because we've heard rumors there might be short nights there.
I
Okay. Gonna skip that part. Well, I guess. You've answered all the questions I've had in mind before. So thank you very much for this fantastic talk, Natalie. It was a pleasure to have you on our show. And we have also a tradition, our podcast, that it's not the host who is supposed to finish this whole off. So if you have some nice words in the end, just go ahead.
Oh, that is actually adorable. I love that you do that. I didn't know. It's funny. I have this like quote that I heard the other day. It is completely irrelevant to the conversation we had, but it's really beautiful, and maybe that's what I'll share. It basically was talking about physics. I was watching this video on physics, and the quote from a physicist was literally, "Our existence transcends the passage of time." And it stood out to me a lot. And I guess when you tell me I need to end the podcast, that's what I want to share. It was something that stood out to me, and it basically means, time passes, but we continue to exist. And so it's a reminder to, I guess, keep doing your best. Even if you're turning 25 in a month, like me, just keep on going.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
wonderful. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Even a bit of inspiration and also philosophic ending to that podcast.
Yeah, well, we can make a whole other podcast on just the things that go on in my head. So
Don't tempt
glad we
me.
can have that at the end. Oh, well, you know who to call.
Absolutely, but this is going to remain a secret for now.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you for having me. We'll talk to you soon.